Well, hello again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. Storyboard 30 is taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the nonprofit multimedia publication that focuses on our local arts, community, and culture. And I'm your host, Mark Fleischer. If you've ever driven toward downtown on North Parkway after it turns into A.W. Willis Avenue, you've probably noticed the long glass and steel structure between 5th and 4th Streets that, depending on your perspective, almost resembles one end of a bridge that is either unfinished or that symbolically takes us into unlimited realms of imagination and possibility. In my case, I prefer the latter's perspective and the structure's symbolism of possibility. Because if you've ever wondered, it is the location of the organization called Bridges, a decades-old nonprofit dedicated to students in the grade 6 through 12 range that, quote, provides students an opportunity to find their voice through unique experiential learning activities that are adventurous, relational, and transformative, end quote. For this episode of Storyboard 30, I sat down with Bridges CEO Dana Wilson to talk about the Bridges mission and an upcoming program called Bridge Builders. We were joined by one of their students, Emmanuel Mosley, who later in the show talks about the Bridges program from his perspective as an 18-year-old still in high school, as well as his position as co-chair of the program's Youth Advisory Board. The three of us met at the main Bridges offices at the corner of 5th Street and A.W. Willis for a discussion in mid-March of 2023. Dana Wilson, thank you for sitting down with Storyboard 30 today and here in the boardroom at Bridges.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, I thought we'd start by talking about what is Bridges, you know, because in my intro, I mentioned that not many people who aren't parents probably don't know as much about Bridges. So tell, what is Bridges, first of all?
Yeah, parents or alumni, maybe. So Bridges, the mission of Bridges is to unite and inspire diverse youth to become confident and courageous leaders committed to community transformation, which is a mouthful, admittedly, but it really boils down to three things. It's about bringing young people together from different backgrounds. So we see that as different zip codes. There's students from 57 different zip codes in our program right now, and different religious backgrounds, different racial backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, and they come together and they develop leadership skills, which we think of as those sort of 21st century skills that you need to be successful. So that's your ability to work in a team, to communicate well, to think critically, and to collaborate and to solve problems in a group. And all of that is in service to making our greater Memphis community a better place. So it really is in service to transforming our community for the better. And I think everything that we do at Bridges, we have a bunch of different sort of ways to engage with this organization, but everything we do is very much grounded in that. So we believe that too often young people in our community are seen as a problem that we need to kind of solve, whether that's, you know, if you look at our school districts or crime or something like that. But we see time and time again with the thousands and thousands of young people that come through our doors that youth are the solution to a lot of the problems that we're facing as a community, and that young people are full of innovative ideas. They're full of creative solutions to the problems we face as a community, and they're full of positive energy. And our mission at Bridges is to harness that energy and make Memphis better.
Yeah. So so when we talk about youth, we're talking about in the mission and program, it talks about six through 12, correct?
That's right. We focus on sort of early adolescence through the end of high school as our focused area of young people. We do have an AmeriCorps program where mostly college age or post-secondary age student young people can serve at Bridges. So there is sort of a pipeline for engagement, but our target demographic for the Bridge Builders program and most of our programming is really middle and high school.
Right. So I should have said grades 6 through 12 in case everyone's thinking ages 6 through 12.
Yeah.
So I love what you said there about engaging youth in that the answers are with our youth versus our thinking typically is vice versa. It's like that we know what's better for our youth versus our youth knowing, you know, we're having a say in solutions.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And the world is changing so quickly, right? I mean, it's the old saying used to be as adults, well, I know what it was like. I was a young person. But if you think, I mean, I'm in my late 40s. If you think about what the world was like when I was in high school, it is so different now. And we're trying to prepare young people for the future, and they're living in a present that looks so different from the one that we lived in. And so we need to collaborate with them. We need to listen to them. We need to work with them. And we need to stop trying to build solutions without them. And, you know, we build things for young people, but we don't often build things with them.
Yeah. And then also we had this huge wrench thrown into everything with the pandemic. Which we can, I would love to actually talk about that in just a second. Looking at the website and looking at some, there's some key terminology that's used. I think that it's a really important that informs the program. I focus on the word adventurous was one. But also the key program ideology, if you will, connect, collaborate, and change, which you kind of just spoke to a degree, the collaboration part.
Yeah. I mean, I think connecting is about that, bringing those building relationships. And I think at the fundamentally, we believe in building trust and relationships because in order for us to move together as a community, we do need to have fundamental trust in one another as humans living in a community together. And so it kind of starts young, right? So it starts with building these relationships of trust across difference. So that's the connection. The collaboration is the leadership skills, and the change is what we want to see in the future, right? So that is kind of those are levels in our program. They're also, I think, words that reflect the mission, the different parts of the mission. And those different parts of the mission aren't just something we talk about. We literally design our program to outcomes related to those three areas. So we're literally designing, measuring, and building experiences for young people that lead to those things. And our methodology is experiential education. So really what that, it sounds, it's a very fancy word, but really all it means is that it's the type of experiences we provide young people are not a typical classroom experience. Basically, you have a group of young people, they're standing in a circle, they're all fairly equal in that circle, and there's a problem or a situation laid out in front of them, and they engage in that experience together. And so the person who's leading it is not a teacher, they're actually just a facilitator, because they're just setting up the experience. The youth are learning through the experience. Mm-hmm. And then the facilitator might say, pause, let's stop and reflect, what's working, what's not working, or they may just wait till the end, and then the group all sits down in a circle and they go through a process of reflection. And the learning really happens in the reflection. When you think back to what you just did, and every single young person in that circle can share what they learned, and they all might learn something different. Mm-hmm. And the thing you thought you learned, you know, you can share, but then you listen to someone else share their experience and you're like, oh, wow, I actually learned that too, you know?
Yeah.
And so while there's intention behind these adventurous experiences we build for students, they're really in control of their own learning. And I think that that helps because, you know, when you do bring students together from so many different backgrounds and experiences, they don't all need to learn the same things.
Yeah.
They're not all interested in learning the same things. And so by using this type of experiential learning methodology, it kind of allows everyone to take away what they need to take away.
Yeah. How many kids are enrolled and in a program at one time, typically?
So in a given year, we can serve, anywhere, I'd say up to 5,000 students in a year.
Wow.
But it's been a little bit reduced in the pandemic. Obviously, just, you know, our ability to serve larger groups and things have cut back. And so we're growing back to the regular size program. But we have different program levels. And so there is the Connect level of programming, which are just like workshops and experiences. And they're sort of short term, not a huge commitment. Often a student, we will go to a school and work with like the entire ninth grade at some specific school for a day. And so, you know, no one, the school signs up. And so all the students get the experience. So it's really an easy, light touch, like a nice, easy way to get students, the basic experience of Bridge Builders. It's, we can use that maybe to you know, tickle someone's fancy and get them excited about maybe getting more involved in Bridges. But each of those experiences also has their own, they have their own learning outcomes. So the experiences are encapsulated. And so we can serve up to 4,000 students in a year doing that level of programming. It's been a little bit less during since the pandemic. And then our regular, our full year program, which is kind of the legacy program of Bridge Builders, which is what has been going on for 35 years. There are many people who are alumni of the program who are in leadership of companies and organizations and and serving as leaders in our community. So it's the program that level that most people recognize as Bridge Builders. And that includes an intensive week-long summer experience that we call a leadership conference. Mm-hmm. And then it's followed up by programming throughout the following school year. So students have to attend a few trainings and events throughout the school year to help kind of pull that learning through. So it's not just something you experience in that one week and then forget about it. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can kind of revisit and touch base with your fellow Bridge Builders and with our team, our staff. And then we even have a deeper level of programming, which is called Bridge Builders Change, which is a fellowship. So I always say it's for the students who kind of want my job, basically. So the youth who are Bridge Builders is their jam. It is the thing that they want to do, you know, more than band or sports or theater. It's like youth leadership in the community is who I am. And so we have a fellowship program. So students from all different schools and walks of life can apply to be in this fellowship. It's actually a paid fellowship because we don't want there to be any barriers to entry. Mm-hmm. And so those students come together, they get very intensive training on how to lead advocacy efforts or organizing efforts or participatory action research, which is like youth-led research in the community. Mm-hmm. And they identify issues in the greater Memphis area that they want to move the needle on. And then they use those skills that they've learned to basically do a year-long project that can result in major policy changes in our school district. It can result in the creation of, one of the groups that worked for several years, it resulted in the creation of a Shelby County Youth Council, which we now support here at Bridges. But that was, you know, their advocacy to our county mayor and our county commission that they needed to listen to young people from mm-hmm. across their districts mm-hmm. To influence their policymaking. And so that was young people that advocated for that to happen. And there's lots of other campaigns they've done over the last decade, but that is a part of the work as well.
Yeah. So it doesn't all just take place in this building, obviously. You're out amongst the community and in the schools themselves. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. So the Connect workshops that I was talking about, we go to schools.
Yeah.
We also can have schools come to us. We have a ropes course and a rock wall in our building, which is pretty awesome. So we love it when students can come here because that means that we can add these really fun and adventurous elements that we know that when you're learning about yourself, but you're also getting outside of your comfort zone, it's the learning is just deeper. And so we want to provide those experiences when possible. But some schools don't have money for buses. And so they can't, so they may not be able to get here. And so we have portable workshops that we can take to those schools. Uh-huh. And then the collaborate level of program in the summer, this building is full of students. So it's generally our 7th and 8th and 9th and 10th grade students that are here all summer. But our 11th and 12th grade students, so rising 11th graders and rising 12th graders, are actually, this summer they'll be at the University of Memphis. And so they'll actually be in a residential conference. So they'll stay in the dorms, they'll have a roommate, they'll kind of have that on-campus experience for that week.
Gotcha. So I was fascinated by the history of Bridges because when you look at the facility, you think, okay, this is a fairly new program, but then you just a glance online, you realize that its roots go way back. And I was equally fascinated by the first program in 1988 with the bringing together of Northside High School students and students from Briarcrest, completely different, diverse set of schools brought together in the first program. So it feels like, based on not only what you're saying, but what I've seen so far online, that the foundations really, it's true to its foundations and true to its roots in bringing kids together from different schools.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that is fundamental to what Bridge Builders is about. Mm-hmm. But even going back to the 100-year history, so, you know, the roots go all the way back to 1922. We just had our centennial celebration.
Yeah.
And we really did that in partnership with the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee, because our roots are actually in the Episcopal Church. And so it was a couple of churches downtown, St. Mary's Episcopal Cathedral and Calvary Church, that started this mission that was basically... in fact, it was the as far as I know, the first professional social worker hired in Memphis was hired for this mission. And that was a relatively new field. And so this mission was based on a model from New York City, from Trinity Wall Street Church. And so the first executive director of this program was a social worker from New York. And she trained the church ladies from these two churches to go door to door and talk to families and find out what people needed and serve the needs of young people, particularly single moms and young children. And in fact, the area that they did the service that they started this mission in was Greenlawn neighborhood, which is where we are now, which is now Uptown, right?
Yeah.
So our roots, this building is built in the actual physical neighborhood where the mission began 100 years ago. And the mission back then was about serving young people. And then in 1988, you know, that's when Becky Webb Wilson came and introduced this idea to Father Don Mowry, who was the executive director of youth service at the time, for this idea for a youth leadership program called Bridge Builders. And it started with just 40 students. You know the story from these two different, very different schools. And it's just grown and grown and grown ever since.
Yeah. And then today, you know, again, reading up on the website, 90 schools sponsor, is a sponsor, did the 90 schools sponsor the Bridge Builders program or the entire program?
I think we have more than 90 schools participating in the program.
Gotcha.
We may have 90 school sponsors listed on the website, or that we have 90 school sponsors, but basically a school sponsor literally is a liaison. It just means there's someone in that school who has officially declared themselves the sponsor for Bridge Builders. And all that means is that they work with our team to get the word out.
Yeah.
And they help. They can nominate students to be a part of the program. So school sponsors do have that authority. But so do I. And actually, so does Emmanuel, who's here with me as a student who's in the program. So student leaders can also nominate their peers. And there's a whole bunch of community leaders that can also nominate. And then also students can just apply to be a part of Bridge Builders through the website. We don't want any barriers to entry. We're not trying to gatekeep this program. It really is available to any young person who's hungry to be a leader.
Yeah. And speaking of that too, you have a deadline coming up for applications for Bridge Builders for the summer program?
Yes. Is that right? For the program, that the Collaborate level of program, which is that year-round program that starts in the summer. So for this coming summer, we're running up on the final deadline for applications, which is April 7th, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we talk about that, I do want to ask one more thing, with regard to getting kids involved in civic affairs. So can you give me some examples? Because I was fascinated by, I was just, again, perusing the website and looking at the engagement that some kids get to have with civic leaders. So what are some examples of their engagement with civic affairs and civic leaders?
There are, well, we look for as many opportunities as we possibly can, but let's see, a good example. I mean, I think the Shelby County Youth Council, which is one of the projects that we have going on right now in partnership with the Shelby County government, is a good example. So those are students who are, they apply to be a part of the program. They represent the 9 districts that we have in Shelby County. And those students, they meet with their county commissioners and with the mayor's office. And I think there's a bit of a conversation that happens amongst them about what the priorities should be for that year. Mm-hmm. So, the mayor may say, I'm really looking at transit and educational funding and youth development opportunities and, probably public safety, 'cause that's always a concern. And so the students will commit to talking to their peers. They usually host a summit where they gather information, and then those leaders come and hear the results of the summit. The students create a report, and mm-hmm. they present that report to the leadership as well, to the commissioners and the mayor's office. And often they're working really closely with different slightly lower level officials in the government, because it's often, you know, the mayor is really busy, right? And he does a lot of things, yeah. But it's, if you think of like, who's the head of the educational chair. So that was Dr. Gray previously. I think it's Reginald Milton now, right? And so, so you have those folks who are really tasked with figuring out what the mayor's priority should be around education. So what we like to see are students really working closely with those offices, because that's where we'll see the best outcomes for young people. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that we've seen, I can say like outcomes driven, you know, like, so during the pandemic, for example, our students started to advocate, well, they had started before the pandemic, but it really amped up during the pandemic around mental health. So access to mental health services, and also really thinking about the connection between trauma and behavior, and how a lot of young people are experiencing trauma. They may have experienced trauma in the morning, they go to school and they're really frustrated and not doing well. And so there's no place to go. There's no necessarily a place to get the support they need. So they may end up acting out, and then they get sent to the principal's office, and then something bad goes down from there, you know? And all along there was unaddressed trauma, right? Mm-hmm. So the students started to advocate for reset rooms, which are basically a model that's a national best practice, but basically to create spaces in schools where a young person can kind of tap out for a minute and say, you know what, I need to go and reset. And there should be someone in that reset room who is prepared to work with them. So it might be a social worker, it might be a behavior specialist, someone who is prepared to sit down and have that conversation with that young person and get them the help that they need so that they can re-enter class centered, focused, and ready to learn.
Yeah.
And so the students at Bridge Builders really felt that if we had that opportunity for students, then on your worst day, when you walk in, you'd have a better option, uh-huh. you know, rather than feeling like you just had to like white knuckle it through another school day.
Yeah.
And so students really started pushing for that. And the school district has implemented that very broadly. Now, I don't think the school district would say it was because the students advocated for it that they did it. But behind closed doors, I've heard people say that. And I definitely feel like that the students brought the problems forward, talked about their experiences, shared their perspective, said, hey, we should be considering these types of options. And so when the ESSER funding came out, it shifted our priorities towards addressing the mental health needs of young people, because that's what young people were talking about, and they were being loud about it, you know? Uh-huh. And so I think that's a really, to me, that's a pretty clear example of young people shaping the discourse. And then when something happened like the pandemic that caused a crisis for many people's mental health, not just young people,
right?
But young people certainly. And then, you know, relief funding came for that. The students were able to make it very clear where, you know, that funding needed to go.
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, we have schools that look really different. And I think that's an example of the youth at Bridges speaking up.
Yeah. I think we as adults could use a reset room sometimes when we go into work, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Speaking of the pandemic and issues of mental health, you know, we've been dealing with issues of mental health leading up to the pandemic. I feel like the pandemic simply exacerbated issues that were already there. But how did that affect the programming here at Bridges?
Well, I can give you the logistical how it affected yeah. us, but I think Emmanuel can probably speak to it from a like
okay,
personal
we'll,
level because
we'll get
that's
to that, yeah.
Because he lived it. So you know, we made a pretty quick call in March, late March of 2020, that we were going to take all of our programming online,
mm-hmm.
That was, I'd say, rather bold, because our programming is very experiential.
Right.
It's all about rock climbing and ropes courses and problem solving and like manipulative games and trust falls and all sorts of things. But for years, we actually had been talking about online gaming and trying to create coalitions of youth across different physical geographic divides. And we'd been talking about this like online space for experiential learning for a long time. We just never really had the time. And so we just went 100% head first into it and committed to having our summer programs happen in the summer of 2020. We didn't cancel our programming, we just did it differently. And so we worked really closely with the students from the Youth Advisory Board, as well as another group of student leaders that just work for the Collaborate level of programming. So there's a group of a council of youth that help the program development team shape the curriculum every year based on kind of hot topics and what young people wanna talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used those leadership groups that we already had in place to really help us figure out what would it look like to reach students in a virtual space. And so we did that. And we actually did it for two summers. We did it for the summer of 2020 as well as the summer of 2021.
Uh-huh.
So our programming was essentially virtual for almost a year and a half. And we felt like that was the safest option because, you know, we are kind of the airport of youth programs in Memphis. We mm-hmm. it is mm-hmm. all about bringing people together from every possible corner of the community. And we know that there are a fair number of students in our program that do live in vulnerable households where they have parents who may be more vulnerable to the negative impacts of COVID-19. And so we didn't want to create a situation where there was an inequity and that students wouldn't necessarily have access. We also know that our programming is so experiential and so physical that it would be really hard to do what we do and have students be socially distanced effectively. So yeah. We were pretty cautious.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of, you mentioned in there the Youth Council and all that. Who introduced the gentleman sitting to your left?
So this is Emmanuel Mosley, and this is his second year as a member of our Youth Advisory Board. This year he is serving as a co-chair, which means he's one of the leaders on the board. And the Youth Advisory Board is a group of students who advise the leadership of the organization. So that's our board of directors, myself as the president and CEO, and the other members of the senior leadership team. And their role really is to keep that 30,000-foot view of what the program is really all about, but keep it real also. So making sure that whatever strategic priorities and general direction we're going in as an organization, that we're in lockstep with what young people need today. And mm-hmm. it also allows young people like Emmanuel to get the experience of leading a nonprofit organization. So they get to operate at that level, at that sort of board level, leadership level, and not all the time because he's a full-time high school student. But I think that, you know, at like 18, he's pretty much ready to step in and be a really effective board member in any context. And so that's pretty awesome. And that's part of our mission, is about young people's voices being a part of the solutions. And so we can't talk the talk and not walk the walk. So so Emmanuel's here with me, and he also helps lead Bridges.
Yeah. Before we move the microphone over to you, you referred to him as your boss. I love that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of joking, but like we also, you know, I think the CEO or president of a or executive director of a nonprofit is hired by the board, you know, so that's who you're accountable to. And while our board of directors do have fiduciary responsibility of the organization, so technically they do like have the ability to hire and fire the CEO, I personally, I meet with the Youth Advisory Board twice as often as I meet with the Board of Directors. I believe that my accountability to the mission lies with them.
Right.
My accountability to the business operations of the organization maybe lies with the Board of Directors. But
yeah.
But to be true to who we are as an organization is to be in service to the youth. So in that sense, in my mind, he really kind of is one of my bosses.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that. Emmanuel, well, let me ask you. I'll just ask you some basic questions first. What school do you go to?
I go to Brighton High School, which is a high school in Tipton County, and it's about 30 to 40 minutes away from here.
Okay, So you come down here yourself?
Yes, sir. When I first started as a bridge builder, I was online, as Ms. Dana just mentioned, because I joined right at the beginning of the pandemic. And over time, as we come back in person, I've had to make that drive about 40 minutes every once a month for the youth advisory board, and sometimes when we have training.
Okay. So you come down here after school?
Yes, sir.
And how many days a week, usually?
It really depends on the week, on what I have or what I sign up for in our portal, our student portal for bridge builders. Mm-hmm. And it's really depending on when our youth advisory board meets, which is usually once a month. But sometimes we have other little minor meetings that we can have either virtual or in person.
Uh-huh. Okay. What is your typical afternoon look like when you're here?
My typical afternoon here, really, it's changed from last year to this year.
I'm sure, yeah.
Last year, we were over at the Youth Action Center, and we would just meet, and we would start off by really just having a conversation with amongst our board members, really just getting a chance to catch up over what's happened, and really just hang out for a little bit until we get into the real meat and potatoes of really talking about what we are trying to do here at Bridges, which is, as on the Youth Advisory Board, we're really just trying to make sure that we're putting Bridges in the best position possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you get your start here before the pandemic?
So, fun story. In my family, there's a long lineage of bridge builders, which starts with my older sister and goes from my two cousins to now my younger sister.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm kind of a buffer in between them. So, I like to think that I started here a long time before that.
Okay, that's nice. But physically, like when you started on the program, was it before or was it during the pandemic?
It was during the pandemic.
It was during, okay.
I signed up right before the pandemic, not knowing that we were going to go virtual.
Oh, man.
So.
Yeah. Oh, so what was that like for you? It was shocking for all of us anyway. But as a high school student, this transition, how did you feel going in? Like, what were your feelings going into this? Just signed up for the program, looking forward to it, and then boom, this happens.
Really, I didn't really know how to feel. I was just kind of like, at that point, we were, I think our conference was that year, might have been July or June. And by that point, that's about 3 months into the pandemic, 3 or 4 months into the pandemic. And it was really a breath of fresh air because I needed to have some sort of social interaction. I couldn't really go see any of my friends, and I didn't have a set sleep schedule. So really, it was really a break. And I didn't really know what to expect at first because it was just something that my mom just told me to do it. And when I actually got there, I was like, this is something completely different than what I expected. And it ended up being one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
Oh, wow. It was probably then, like you said, a breath of fresh air. Because I know every school and every school had different, responded to it differently. And kids in different schools had different experiences with regard to the pandemic. But wow. So now we've eased out of the pandemic. Here we are, 2023. So last year was your first time experiencing the whole thing in person, you know? So now what does an afternoon look like? You meet with board members, and what other activities do you engage in?
One of the main ones I'll say that I engage in is training. So with trainings, it's like a miniature summer conference. It's usually about 3 hours during a Saturday, Sunday, usually depending on when you sign up to do it. And that's really just where you come in and you're really just taught a little, like a little miniature lesson about something that's happening in the community, and trying to open up like your understanding of it. And with that, you meet a lot of different people that come from different backgrounds. And I love that because it's way different than talking to someone over a Zoom or a call. And really for me, it really allowed me to understand a lot more about a person looking or sitting across from them and really getting a chance to actually talk to them and learn where they come from and how they view things.
How do you think this has prepared you for life, for you know, your future?
I say that it's prepared me greatly. When I first came in, I didn't really have the best social skills. I was sort of quiet. I didn't really say a lot. It just took me a little bit longer to warm up to people. But over time, I've seen that I've built my leadership skills have grown immensely. I've been able to be more confident and really starting a conversation and being able to talk to someone instead of just sitting there kind of waiting anxiously before for someone to come up and talk to me. But I say that it's really helped me understand really what I want in life and helped me grow as a person instead of just being closed-minded and just really meek and not really wanting to go out and do anything.
Yeah. Do you find you tell kids at school and friends and all about this program?
I tell a lot of my friends in the Memphis area because I'm originally from Cordova, which is a little bit outside of Memphis.
Yeah.
And I moved to Tipton County around my ninth or eighth grade year. And it's a little bit challenging telling people up there because there's a little bit of a stigma about the city of Memphis. And when I mention it, I try and make sure to break that stigma as much as possible by saying that Bridges is not surrounded by that image. It's really different, and it's really about youth empowerment. And I try and make sure that they understand that more so than grouping it in with everything else that's happening in the city.
Yeah. You're right about the stigma, especially outside of city limits, right? When Bridge Builders begins this summer, how does your role then change, or does it change?
That's something that I really wanted to address in our youth advisory board. Me personally, if you were asking me about a year ago, I wouldn't know how to really answer that. But over time, I have learned the answer to that. So you could really just join by becoming an AmeriCorps member and kind of helping to facilitate conference, or you could really just come, or that's the main way you can. We've tried in the youth advisory board to try and find a different way to come back by having our alumni kind of just come back talk in the Bridges program. But the main way that after my role could change after I graduate is really by becoming an AmeriCorps member and staying in touch by facilitating facilities or trainings if that member wanted to, or alumni wanted to, excuse me.
Right, right. Well, that was actually, you just answered my next question because, you know, Cloud 901, for example, over at the library has a great program. And I talk to kids there who will say, I'm going to be 19 this summer and I can't come to Cloud 901 anymore because I'm no longer going to be a high school student. But AmeriCorps gives you the opportunity to bridge the gap between high school into adulthood or college or whatever you end up doing, and gives you a chance to further engage and keep in touch, to further contribute, right? Yeah, that's terrific. So you mentioned social skills. Any other life skills you can think of that you've learned through the program?
Really just being open-minded to new ideas.
Yeah,
I've learned really beforehand, I used to be a little combative about proving my point is right, no one else is right, because in my eyes I'm stubborn like that. But over time I've really broken that habit, and I've really just taken the time to realize that in order to be an effective leader, sometimes you have to learn to be a follower before you can actually lead someone. And I learned how to be a follower. Really, I just learned that I don't have to be the loudest voice in the room always. I could just really just listen to someone else's opinion and take away from what they're saying. There's really no right answer in any real situation in life. And that's the main thing I've taken away, really.
Being a listener is a big deal. That's a really, really important skill. And we adults forget that listening is so hugely important. That's good. That's really good.
Almost forgot youth and adult equity.
Okay, so about one more thing you have to say. Yeah, go
ahead. About the youth advisory board.
Yeah.
Something here at Bridges that I love that we do is youth and adult equity. I didn't really know what the word equity meant until about 2 years ago at our summer conference, when I really learned that equity just means giving the what someone needs instead of giving everyone equal opportunity or equal resources. Mm-hmm. It's just really giving someone what they need instead of even playing field and helping them out. And with youth and adult equity, it's really different for me because I'm used to having an adult tell me blah, 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 and not really having a say in it. But mm-hmm. with that here, it's really equal. Anyone here who's an adult, I'm treated as an adult. Even when I was younger, I was treated as an adult who can make responsible decisions. And I really have a say here, and I'm really grateful for that because it's kind of different when you turn 18. You are an adult technically, yeah. And you are treated as one. And here at Bridges, we are actually given the opportunity to have a say in matters, and actually we're heard instead of just being told to go sit in a corner, kind of listen and not have a voice.
Yeah. But
with youth and adult equity here, we actually do have a voice, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah. Have you had any days where you had to take advantage of the reset?
Not particularly, because I believe that I just like to think that Miss Dana said earlier that she considers me to be her boss. I prefer the term colleague. I don't, because for me it sometimes it's weird because how my household is. It's really it's kind of my parents and then me. The child knows their place, or not? Well, yeah, child knows
right.
their place, but. It's weird for me because I'm not used to being given that equal footing. So some days I don't really, it's second nature, or it's not second nature, but it's just kind of odd. Instead, it takes me jogging my memory or for Miss Dana to actually remind me that you are equal here.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
I mean, I appreciate what you said about youth and adult equity. I think that, It's kind of a new way of framing our work. You know, I think that we're talking as a nation and as a community more about equity and fairness and what does that look like. And I think that it's pretty grounded in who we are at Bridges. But this idea that young people have expertise in their own experiences, that they know what they're experiencing and they know what they need better than anyone else.
Right.
And that, that we as the professionals, we may have degrees and we may have lots of experience. We may even have some wisdom. But it's the amalgamation of that wisdom and the young person's experience that allows us to create like the third thing, the new thing.
Yeah.
And that's where the innovation space lives. And I think that as a community, we get kind of tangled up because we have tried so many things to solve so many of the social problems that we have, and particularly around things that young people face, because I think, we think about, the most vulnerable people in our community, the older people and the younger people are often kind of the experiencing like the more intensified version of any ill that we're suffering from,
right.
And so I think that by listening to young people, particularly who tend to be early adopters of new ideas that end up becoming the mainstream and the norm, right? Mm-hmm. So if we're working with young people around creating these positive changes in our community and really listening to them and centering their experiences as young people, it just makes all of our decisions better. And I think that it is great for the young person, but I also think it's really great for every aspect of society. So it would be great for schools. It's great for government. It's efficient for resource expenditures, right? Mm-hmm. So I just think with young people, our decisions as a community can be stronger.
Yeah.
And if we're serving 5,000 students a year, and we've got 1,200 students who are coming through the Bridge Builders Collaborate level of programming, that's like the bread and butter program, over the course of year after year after year, that's a lot. It adds up to a good number of students. I mean, I rarely go to any audience and I can say who here has experienced bridge builders. It's like there's always more than one person.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just we're getting around.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I love how you said that you're older. Is it older siblings?
Older sister and two cousins.
Okay. Yeah, that's really cool.
It is, because at first I was going to say that my mom told me one day, your sister did this, you're
going to
do it.
So you're going to.
Voluntold, as they say.
Yeah, I got voluntold, and it was kind of weird because I was like, oh, she's signing me up for this.
Uh-huh.
And then one day out of the summer, she was like, hey, you need to go do this. I was like, it was kind of funny. And every day on the Zoom call, it was kind of like, I didn't know what to expect. It's kind of sitting there like, oh, they're talking about something deep. This seems interesting. And when I actually started to like kind of understand what everything was and like what it really functioned as, because I went in as like a clean slate, so I didn't really know what to expect. But coming out of it, I was better for it. And I actually learned about the Youth Advisory Board through my second conference online, and through that, it really helped me. And with the electives that we have, I actually learned about Light Memphis, which is sort of like Bridges, but it focuses solely on like a business and helping people of color or students of color actually start their own business.
Uh-huh.
And I started my own business through there.
Okay.
So really, I owe that to Bridges more than anything for getting me connected with them.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. I wish I had a program like this in high school.
I think we all do.
All right.
Can I talk about recruitment just one more time?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
Yeah. So if anyone in your audience knows a current 6th through 11th grade student who is doesn't necessarily have to be self-identified as a leader, but who is curious about meeting different people, who wants to develop themselves as an individual, potentially as a leader, and who cares about giving back to the Memphis community, now is the time to apply to Bridge Builders. And you can apply online at bridgesusa.org. It's pretty easy to find that application. And students do have to make a personal statement. It's a very short essay, and they just need to discuss what they hope to learn from Bridge Builders and what they hope to contribute. But beyond that, there are no barriers to being a part of the program. We're not looking for a specific GPA or a certain set of experiences. It really is about openness and disposition. And so if you know anyone, or if there are any parents or students listening, we really recommend that you apply. And our deadline is April 7th.
April 7th. Very good. And once again, it's at the website,
bridgesusa.org.
Dana Wilson, Emmanuel Mosley, thank you both for sitting down with me for Storyboard 30.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Storyboard 30 from FM 89.3 WYPL. For more information on Bridges and the upcoming Bridge Builders program, visit bridgesusa.org. Thanks to my guests, Bridges CEO Dana Wilson, and Bridges Student and Youth Advisory Board Co-Chair Emmanuel Mosley. Thanks to our sponsors at the Memphis Library Foundation, and as always to WYPL producer Vance Durbin, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3, this has been your host, Mark Fleischer, inviting you to join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with Memphians who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week.